Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order. So we have an opportunity to hear from a lot of proposals today, and so each group will get around 10 minutes, and please, 5 to 10, please try to stay within those parameters. We'd really appreciate it, and if you can, stop a little bit early so we can have an opportunity to ask some questions if members have some questions. So, Representative Kreshaw, you're first up. As you're getting settled, we have a quorum, and Representative Heitzman's have an opportunity to take a peek at the minutes, I'm hoping, and if so, would you be willing to move the April 3rd, 2024 minutes?
I just briefly reviewed the minutes, Mr. Chairman, and I actually did not find any problems, so I will move the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman. Any question to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes are approved. That was really quick there, Representative Backer.
I know. I was.
Thank
so,
you for noticing that. Yeah, that's a compliment, Jim.
Okay. Representative Kreshaw, welcome to the Legacy Committee, and please tell us what you're working on.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you move the bill already? I didn't know if I missed that, or do you need to?
So just so everybody knows, we're not going to move bills today. We're hearing them under informational only, and just to move it along. But
thank you. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you to your CA. Really appreciate that. We'll be brief. We'll be efficient. We do have a wedding to get back to, so we'll be hustling on the road as well. We have not started the festivities yet, so everything here today is on the up and up. Mr. Chair, members, we have the Minnesota Fishing Museum in Little Falls that was founded by a gentleman by the name of Al Barrett, who basically put his life, he was a retired Air Force, his life and passion of fishing into this. And the idea was to keep telling those stories and keep pushing the generations of fishing that we know is so important. So I have with me today Brenda Pawlowski, who will be talking about, she's the director for the Fishing Museum, as well as Nick Kotz, who will talk a little bit about why this project is so important. So I'm going to hand it over to my testifiers and let them give you the story, because it's way better from them. So with that.
Thank you, Representative Kreshaw. Ms. Pawlowski?
Pawlowski.
Yeah, welcome. Please introduce yourself and go ahead, please.
My name is Brenda Pawlowski. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Fishing Museum. First of all, good morning, Chair Lilly and committee members. I come before you today with a plea that echoes the heartbeat of our beloved Minnesota Fishing Museum and Hall of Fame. As custodians of our state's fishing legacy, we have encountered challenges in recent times, struggles with charitable gambling, escalating utility and insurance costs, and the absence of a cash reserve have cast a shadow of uncertainty over our institution's future. Since our registration with the state in 1993 and the opening of our doors in our current building in 1998, we have been a beacon of Minnesota's fishing heritage. In March of 2023, our significance was officially recognized through a proclamation designating us as a state fishing museum and hall of fame. Central to our mission is the administration of the Master Angler Program. It's promoted by the Department of Natural Resources and managed by us without any financial compensation. This program serves as a cornerstone of education, celebrating anglers' achievements and enriching the fishing experience for residents and visitors alike. However, our impact transcends mere accolades. We are an educational resource, a catalyst for tourism, and a guardian of Minnesota's freshwater fishing history. Minnesota, with its 11,800 lakes and 6,500 rivers and streams, is synonymous with fishing. The economic impact of recreational fishing is profound, generating billions of dollars annually and positioning us second in boat sales nationwide, behind only Florida. Fishing isn't just a pastime here. It's ingrained in our identity, our culture, and our economic fabric. Without us, where would individuals turn to immerse themselves in our rich fishing history? Where would they marvel at state record fish or learn about decoy carving artists? Where would children gain insights into water safety and witness the evolution of fishing? Our museum isn't just a repository of artifacts, it's a custodian of memories, a conduit of knowledge, and a guardian of our natural heritage. For over two decades, we have persevered without external funding, sustained by our dedication and the goodwill of our community and the fishing industry. yet we now find ourselves at crossroads, and without your support, our journey may come to an abrupt end. With your endorsement of $150,000 from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, we can navigate the storm, ensuring that future generations can continue to explore, learn, and be inspired by our fishing heritage. In closing, I implore you to recognize the significance of our museum, not merely as a cultural institution, but as a vital pillar of Minnesota's identity. The future success of our museum rests in your hands, and with your support, we can ensure that Minnesota's fishing legacy endures for generations to come. Thank you for your attention and for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions from members or what is, just a quick question, what is your current like budget? And then
sure.
Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Mr. Lillian. I'll turn it over to Ms. Pawlowski here. And I just want to, as I put a context in this, she talked about Master Angler and all the programs. When you think about the Fishing Museum, also think about the pros. And I know Representative Heintzman is very familiar with the fishing pros, with all the legacies. And I won't try to, I won't name names. She knows the pros better than I do because I'll miss some. But what I want, before I answer your question, what I want to remind us is the budget goes way beyond this in the sense that we have high schools that are expanding their fishing programs. You know, all of that legacy will be forgotten and lost if we don't have a place for an archive like that. So if you could answer the question on the budget you're using to sustain the legacy, because that's really what this is.
Our budget for this year is $171,767. You know, and that budget used to be $240,000, but we've had to pay it back because of just, you know, economic reasons, just to keep the doors open.
Thank you, Director. Any other questions? I don't see any at this point. Thank you, Representative Kreisha, for bringing your guests. And any closing comments, please?
All I would like to do is say thank you and give Mr. Cox a chance to just give a word of support.
Mr. Cox.
Thank you. My name is Nick Cox. I'm with president of Razor Ice Augers, which is a Minnesota-based ice auger company for ice fishing. I'm a father of two boys. My dad's sitting here in the galley here watching. I owe it to him for fish, you know, bringing fishing into my life, making a career out of it, caring so much for Brenda and the goal and the operation of the Minnesota Fishing Museum. And like Representative said, with all the growth of student angling, there's a lot to be just left out and forgotten about, and kind of have the wrong reasons for doing things. So I 100% think everybody in this room should consider supporting this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members.
Thank you, guests and Representative Kreisha. Looking forward to getting up to the museum maybe. And
if you come today, we'll bring you to a wedding.
And okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You. Have a good day. Enjoy your
Thank
wedding.
You.
Representative Heitzman thinks he should be in there, in the museum.
Mm-hmm. I fit for them.
He has to be over 50.
Okay.
Not yet.
Representative Hornstein. So again, a reminder, we're just kind of, we're hearing all the proposals today. We're not moving them per se, but Representative Hornstein, welcome to the Legacy Committee. And
thank you.
I'm excited to have you and try to keep it as brief as you can, and then we'll leave us some opportunity for questions, but let your guests get settled. Go ahead, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. It's wonderful to be in this committee and wonderful to be with you. House File 2936 relates to a really important piece of public art in Loring Park in Minneapolis. And it's called the Burger Fountain. This has just been an icon in our community since the mid-1970s. And there are so many people and so many events in this park you can't miss this fountain. And unfortunately, you know, it has been inoperative, and we will have several speakers that will talk to you about its importance to our community. There are literally millions of visitors in various events in Loring Park, and they come from throughout the state. So this really has statewide significance, and so I will just go directly to our testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We're lucky enough to have in our pack an amazing photo of the fountain when it was functioning. But go ahead, please introduce yourself and
sure.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Thank you, and Representative Hornstein. Thank you for your service to our state. My name is Elizabeth Schaefer, and I'm the Park Commissioner for District 4, which is the district within which the Burger Fountain in Loring Park sits. I am really excited about this opportunity that we have together today for two reasons. First of all, we have the chance to really support a grassroots community-initiated project that benefits the much broader community. Burger Fountain, in years past, has been a focal point for regional and statewide celebrations like Pride, Holidazzle, and the Loring Park Art Fair. The fountain has historically welcomed people as they move from downtown, the convention center, Loring Greenway into Loring Park, and then onto the Sculpture Garden. And actually, this is the same path that I saw a group of World Cup athletes following through our park system and green spaces just a few months ago. Secondly, we have the chance together to rebuild this iconic work of art for future generations. We plan to reconstruct the fountain in the exact same design that it was built in the 70s, and yet expand on the impact by adding a small plaza and seating for broader gatherings and hopefully some really innovative programming. So in conclusion, I have to be honest and say we do need your help. But I am optimistic that we will be able to bring back this iconic structure and hear the sound of falling water again in this space. I really thank you for your consideration of this project. I would like to now introduce Mary Bougeau, Chair of the Burger Fountain Task Force.
Thank you. Mr. Bougeau, introduce yourself, please, and go ahead when you're ready.
Yes, I'm Mary Bougeau. I'm the Chair of the Burger Fountain Task Force. And I'd like to thank Commissioner Schaefer and also Representative Hornstein for their comments here. And I'd like to thank members of the committee and yourself for allowing us to hear our requests today. So as was mentioned, the Burger Fountain is an iconic piece of public art. I myself actually have lived in the Loring Park neighborhood for 30 years. And we have hundreds of thousands of visitors to our area every year. And we regularly participate in neighborhood booths at the local events. And I can't tell you the number of people that have come up to us and asked us about the fountain and when the fountain is going to come back again. And in addition, over the very long time, I've seen so many people spend time at the fountain, whether it's for photographs, just feeling the spray of the fountain on their face, hear water running over the tiles, or just spending time kind of listening and meditating by the fountain. So restoration of the fountain has been prioritized in 9 city, park, and Metro Council small area plans, each that were approved between the late 80s and 2017. And it's been the top priority for Friends of Loring Park's annual strategic plans. Our community has come together now to make this a reality, already raising $250,000 in a short time from private donors. In addition to the restoration of the fountain, as Commissioner Schaefer had said, and through community engagement, the design plans have expanded that area around the fountain to support new programming and provide the ADA accessibility that is needed so that even more people can interact and engage with the fountain. We are asking for your support with matching funds to help us achieve our goal of ensuring that the Burger Fountain continues to provide widespread public enjoyment for the next 50 years and beyond. And again, I thank you for your time and consideration. And I'd like to introduce now Dave Heil, who is president of the Friends of Loring Park.
Thank you very much. Please go ahead and introduce yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Heil. I'm president of the Friends of Loring Park. and I've been in the neighborhood for 20 years and been adamantly represented by Representative Frank Hornstein for that time, so I want to appreciate all your years of service. So I want to emphasize that this is project is really a grassroots effort. Since 2012, the Friends of Loring Park and Citizens of Loring Park Community, the neighborhood organization, have been trying to get the Burger Fountain replaced. In 2012, the park board had no money to replace the fountain, so it was determined that the neighborhood would have to raise the money. And from there, we formed the Burger Fountain Task Force, which has been trying to get the project going since 2012. The project was put on hold until the 2017 master plan was developed by the park board, because they wanted to see, does the community really want the Burger Fountain to be replaced? And it wasn't implemented in the 2017 master plan. The community wants the fountain back and working. Then COVID hit, and that really delayed us. And so we became slow organizing out of COVID, and by that time, the budget almost increased. I would say it increased 40%. And so we had the daunting task to raise more money from the community. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, the fountain was turned off because it was couldn't put any more Band-Aids on it. It was dangerous to go down in the vault below. So it was determined that the whole fountain has to be replaced, including the infrastructure, and that's what has raised the cost up considerably. As I said before, the community has raised about $250,000, and we're going to need to raise the other $1.5 million. And so we've got a daunting task ahead of us to get that accomplished. So we'll be thankful for any support you can give us, and appreciate this considering this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And it is shocking to hear how costs have gone up substantially, you know, in projects all over the state. So any member questions? Representative Hussein.
Chair Harnison, thanks for bringing this forward. And I'm familiar with Loring Park and played in the young age. But the only concern that I have is Minneapolis Park and Rec. Are they contributing any money in this?
Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
Commissioner.
Thank you. Yes, if you turn to your handout on the second side of it, and if you don't have it, I will bring this one right over to you. But there has the detail on what the park, we have both park dedication funds contributing, as well as MPRB rehab funds contributing. This is a really a special opportunity to really bring a partnership between state, MPRB, and private funds. And did you get one?
No, I don't have
it. I'll bring one. Did that answer your question?
It's on the back.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Schaefer. Any further question, Representative Hussein?
Thank you. I don't have any further.
So thank you very much for coming, and I would say that, in my opinion, the Minneapolis Park system is incredible. I mean, it's, you know, I've been lucky enough to travel all over the country, and it's certainly one of the best in the nation. Just amazing what goes on in the Minneapolis Park system. So thank you for your service on the Park Board and others. Representing Hornstein, any final comments?
Mr. Chair, members, just thank you. Thanks for hearing this. And again, this is an issue of regional and statewide significance, given how many people visit this park. You know, this is really a beautiful piece of public art, but it's also that there'll be a plaza built. There's it will really be an incredible gathering place in a very central and beautiful part of our city.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you, guests, for coming forward. I just want to use this opportunity to thank Frank for your service, too. You probably won't pop up on the floor to say how great you are, but, you know, I really, it's just really been an
honor. So much.
Really been an honor to serve with you. And
thank you.
You're great for Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Hussein. Twin City Jazz Festival.
Can I make a correction? It's the Selby
there's,
Avenue.
There's two of them.
There's
two.
Okay, all right.
Do we have any testifiers?
Dana Materis, Martinez. So I think at this point we'll have your other guests come up on the Selby, and then we'll revisit the other one as the people come. So. Sorry, have to call you back up. There's a little bit of that, and we'll just we'll adjust.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Chair Liddy, and the committee members. I'm honored to present today Selby Jazz Festival, which is a community gathering and a place that musics and foods and our businesses come together in Selby. And it's been phenomenal work that Mr. White and Aldrich, our community, has been putting together. And it happens every year. And not only that in Twin Cities, but people travel throughout the state and participate this event and cultural identities for our Rando community. And I would like to have testify Mike White, who has been a champion.
Thank you. Welcome. Good morning, everyone.
Mike, please
good morning,
introduce
sir.
Yourself, and thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Coming.
I'm Michael Wright, the founder of the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest. And first, I would like to thank Representative Hussein for the opportunity to share the ongoing vision of the Legacy Committee to the Legacy Committee body of a jazz music event that promotes arts and community businesses. A traditional and inclusive neighborhood gathering people look forward to. This is what the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest has built on for 23 years, from a couple vendors and a small stage tribute to Jack McDuff, to a thriving event filled with the reunion of old friends and new acquaintances. With the rise of expenses of producing this beloved, vibrant community festival that brings jazz lovers from all over the region and overlaps the fabric of the other Twin City communities, the Legacy Grant will guarantee this event continues for years to come. It's an honor to speak to its positioning and positive impact. It has become an uplifting and integral part of the year, the second Saturday of September. The Legacy Grant will help support the continued efforts of the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest to bring great Twin Cities and national talent into the community and to continue a day of prosperity through music and to keep Ward 1 and Summit University a destination place for our city. Thank you. I'd like to now turn over to Braxton Housley of Walker West.
Thank you so much,
Welcome,
Michael.
Mr. Housley.
And thank you, committee, and thank you, Representative Hussein. This Jazz Fest, it's more than about music. It's about community. And Walker West, Michael is going to be retiring this year, and we're going to be next week transferring the assets of Selby Avenue Jazz Fest to Walker West Music Academy. Now, we've always been known for education in the community, but with our strategic plan, we added one word to our mission, and it's perform, because we believe that people benefit by not only by learning music, and we cover all ages from infants to elders, some elders with dementia, but by listening to music. And so we want to make sure that this festival, which is important for our community, which has been underserved, remains a part of our community, and it keeps our community vibrant, because the arts and culture makes our community vibrant, and we want that vibrancy throughout the Twin Cities, and we specifically want it in Rondo. And so I am here to be, you know, the new, I guess, if I want to say it, new owner. But we're still going to consult with him of the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest. And as us being new owners, we consider the Selby Avenue Jazz Fest a worthy community investment. And we hope that our state will see it the same way. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for members? I'm not seeing any at this time, but I'm excited to hear that it's being folded into Walker West. I've been lucky enough to see a few shows at your
Rondo Community Center.
At your Walker West Center.
Oh, great.
And just amazing, amazing talent, and just so blessed by the performance that we saw. Vice Chair Hussein, any final comments or anything else you'd like us to know?
I just want to thank Mike Wright for being out there for our community, not only for chess, but also I would like to recognize Golden Times and how amazing that that place was gathering for our community help. I wanted to thank you for the great work that you have done for many, many years. But you should never be retiring. We need your consulting. We want you to be in the community and advise us how to do better. And I look forward to this event that's happening this year. And as we say, this is not only a community gathering, but it's art and culture, and that what brings the community together. Thank you. I look forward for your support.
Thank you very much, guests.
Thank you.
Good job, Vice Chair Hussein. Is Dana Martinez here by chance? So moving on then to Rondo Days. So since you're in the chair, perfect.
Once again, thank you for having me here. And Rondo Day is a day that I grew up in the neighborhood and participated. And not only for myself, but my child also always looking forward to it. And it hasn't been happening since 2019 because the COVID has been affected. And this was ongoing for decades, 100 years, a celebration for African-American Rondo community in St. Paul. And this is what's happened for community gathering festival and having identities and cultural. And that's why we'll like to bring it back, the Rondo Day, and chair and committee members. I look forward for your support. This is creates jobs, creates opportunities. And if we want to occupy our young generations, we need to have events, and we need to have ongoing support. And I would love to yield for my testifier, Nick Muhammad.
Mr. Muhammad, welcome. Please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nick Muhammad. I am a St. Pauler and honored to be a part of the Rondo Days Planning and Board Festival this year. I'll be introducing a few people here just so we have our orientation. So the first person to speak up, I want to make sure we kind of have a overlay of some of the information that you all have already received. So I'll just jump in and out facilitating. So the first testifier that I'll yield my time to is Makaya Griffin.
Welcome, Ms. Griffin, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. My name is Makaya Griffin. I come here in two fashions, one as the Executive Director of Rondo Community Land Trust, and two as a daughter of Rondo. And I think the first time that I actually realized I was part of something very special is when I got to be in the parade for Rondo Days. As a community anchor, Rondo Community Land Trust really is about celebrating the arts and culture of the community, and we are so proud to be here to supporting so many efforts, including Rondo Days. And you can pinch me if you would have told my little 8-year-old self I'd be here testifying today about Rondo Days and all the joy that it's brought to me, my family, and the fact that not only have I celebrated with my family, but I get to bring my children and now my granddaughter to Rondo Days. Thank you. I'm going to let others speak here.
And
Robert, I think
that's... Yes, and thank you. And Chair, I would like to introduce the current head organizer and chair of the Rondo Day Festival and the man responsible for handling a lot of headaches, Gail Smaller.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you all.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Gail Smaller. I am the son of Floyd Smaller, who was one of the co-founders along with Mr. Anderson. And I would like to thank you all for the opportunity and the potential support. Rondo Days is something that I always took for granted as something that was just a part of Rondo community and would always be present and would never change. After the events of 2020, the pandemic in 2021, Rondo Days kind of fell to the wayside by, you know, some factors that were out of our control. During that time, after conversation with Mr. Anderson and my father, we realized that there was a really big hole that was left in the heart of the community without Rondo Days being present. We're going through a lot of transformation in the neighborhood. A lot of things are changing, but one of the things that is true is that what's at the heart of Rondo is the people. And Rondo Days was an opportunity since 1983 for the people of Rondo to come together to bond, to mourn the loss of an amazing community. And for the last 40 years, this has been something that was present. And it's honored, I'm honored that Mr. Anderson and my father have passed the torch to myself to carry on the Megan legacy that they started. And your support would help us in amazing ways as we're looking to rebuild the infrastructure of Rondo Days to get it back to its full capacity. Any support that's provided would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. I just have to say what a blessing your voice is. After last night, we were on the House floor till midnight, and some of the voices just were not as magical as yours, sir. I think all my
we didn't get home until
I'm not naming names, but man, my ears are hurting from yesterday.
So thank you, Chair.
Mr. Muhammad.
Not to put any pressure on Mr. Anderson, but we'd like to introduce one of the co-founders. Hopefully his voice is just as magical.
No pressure. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Marvin Anderson, and I am a co-founder of the Rondo Day Celebration. And you can imagine what it's like to sit here and talk to people who were a part of the Rondo Day Celebration when they were 6, 7, or 8 years old, and now they're bringing back their grandchildren. And that was one of the founding things with which we started the Rondo Days Celebration over 41 years ago. It's to offer an opportunity for our families, our friends, our community, to remember the times of the Rondo community and prepare our children for the future of Rondo. It has been a wonderful opportunity to work with these individuals, and I want to thank the committee for giving us an opportunity to come forward and present the next phase of Rondo Days. I remember my very first Rondo Days celebration, the very first parade. I was a young man then, quite charming, and I had an afro about 4 inches long. Things have changed, but the spirit of Rondo still lives, and under the leadership of Gail Smaller and Mr. Muhammad, supported by the entire Rondo community, especially the Rondo Roundtable, Rondo Days will be revived again and restored and take its rightful place as one of the proud, fabulous public ceremonies, along with St. Patrick's Day, Grand Avenue Days, all of the parades that St. Paul is famous for. Rondo Days wants to get back into that coalition and make our city and our state very proud. So thank you for this opportunity to present this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking through the paperwork as we're hearing the presentation, and I just wanted to see if we had an ask anywhere. I didn't see a number, just wanted to give the testifiers an opportunity to.
Vice Chair Hussein.
We're asking 250.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds very reasonable.
Representative Trott.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hussein, for bringing this forward, Rondo neighborhood. I grew up in the Rondo neighborhood area in the 80s. You know, my good friend Tiger Jack on that hill, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, I grew up on Dale and Eaglehart, and, you know, I went through that neighborhood during that time. That's a great neighborhood I grew up in. I guess my question to you is, can you give me some details of some of the challenges you had in the last 4 years, you know, due to the pandemic and some of the challenges you had to organize this and, you know, like to hear more about that.
Well, there were quite a few challenges. One challenge was my dad was really worried about COVID and the effects that it would have on people gathering together. That was one of the primary impacts for 2022. 2023 was more of really rebuilding the infrastructure, reforming the board. A lot of the elders have moved on. You know, we've been blessed to have Mr. Anderson and my father still sticking with us, but a lot of those former, you know, real legacy board members had either relocated to other places or passed away. And so really figuring out how we could capture the vision that was left as that legacy, but bring in that new generation that would stay true to those principles and get those things reformed, along with additional cost, right? Safety cost, the police cost pretty much tripled, EMT cost, the cost for staging, getting permits, a lot of different things have changed. And so we took that time to really reground ourselves, reroute ourselves, come with a really clear vision that would work with the new increased cost and some of the new challenges that we face.
Representative Chow.
No, thank you for that detail. You know, every time I drive past Rondo, I know the Wendy's is not part of the Rondo neighborhood. It's across the street. But I've been, you know, eating out of that Wendy's for, like, you know, forever. So thanks for being here.
I would like to add a little bit of remarks, and thank you for recognizing Target Jacks. I used to live right behind him, and I met him. I used to get a candy from him as a young, and it's a place for us to sit and watch Dell Street, you know, cars pass by. But what have really affected this community was the COVID, and a lot of the elders has passed away, and a lot of them has been relocated, and the funding, this community has been underserved, and poverties in, and the job creation opportunity has been out of the coalition. So that's why they were unable to raise this funding, and they was unable to get this going, because elders used to put it together for years and years this event to happen, and there was no place for them to raise this cannon, and the COVID has affected a lot in our community, as we know. So I would love to bring this back, and I want to ask all my colleagues for them to support, so we can have this created jobs and created youth opportunities. And we always talk about it, youth crime prevention, but if we don't invest in our community and young generations, and they don't have nothing to do, then what could happen? So I would like to see if we can all get support and behind this and bring back around the days.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hussein, and thank you, guests. Great job. So, again, is Dana Martinez?
I am.
Oh, good. Please come forward.
I guess.
Vice Chair Hussein, go ahead and introduce your next project.
My teammate, Jared Newman, who's not here, I'm carrying this bill on behalf.
Yep.
He's not here today, but I would like to testify on behalf. It's very sad that he's gone away, and I have been sitting with him and learned a lot of information, because he have a lot of experience. but I'm bringing this bill forward, Twin Cities Jazz Festival, that happened in the heart of the city of downtown Minneapolis, where a community get together and cultural and celebrations. And I have been participating for many, many years. And I look forward, you know, see how we can support that festival, because Fest brings community together and creates the jobs and creates opportunity for community connect. So I would like to yell for my testifier.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hussein, and welcome. And please tell us about the Twin Cities Jazz Festival.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dana Martinez. I'm the Executive Director of the Twin Cities Jazz Festival. And I actually just started full-time last November. I took over for Steve Heckler, who retired in October. He founded the Jazz Festival 26 years ago, and so I'm very happy to be taking over for him and this great great festival, this great legacy. And I believe you have a one sheet of our Jazz Festival. It's coming up here on June 21st and 22nd, yes. We have our wonderful headliners announced, and we will be announcing our full schedule, which will include over 200 locally based musicians. As part of the festival, we have two outdoor stages in Nears Park in St. Paul, and then we also work with many venue partners around Nears Park and beyond. This year we have, like last year too, we had a venue on the west side in St. Paul, and then we also have a few in Minneapolis too, as well as Crooners in Fridley. So this festival really touches thousands of people. They come down to the to Mears Park. It says we have on the one sheet 35,000, and the way we get to that number is we have the 2 days of the Jazz Festival, which is a free, a completely free admission event. And then also our venues all around that I mentioned. And we also live stream the Jazz Fest from Mears Park. And that goes we have people signing up from all over the state, but then all over the world as well. So people know the Twin Cities Jazz Festival. The question was, how does it meet the requirement of presenting arts and culture? And that is what we do. The money that we are requesting would go towards paying musicians. We pay all of our musicians that participate, not only the headliners, but all of the locally based musicians. And then also go towards the production costs. They mentioned for Selby Jazz the rising costs, and those are definitely going up for us as well. So the money would go towards that. Also towards our youth programs. We have opportunities for youth to perform on stages. We've got two youth stages, and they perform on our main stage as well as learning from older musicians, from professional musicians. All of our headliners are required to have master classes with young musicians, many of whom are from Walker West Music Academy. And then also it would go towards keeping this festival free and accessible for folks to come down and enjoy the great American art form of jazz, as well as just being in community with each other. Last year was an amazing weekend of people coming down and just enjoying a beautiful summer day with each other. And it also brings really great business for all the businesses around there in Lower Town as well. So the reason why we are applying or requesting this money this year is because we did put in an application through the State Arts Board, and unfortunately we were deemed ineligible because we had a report that for a grant in 2022 that was late by a couple of weeks, so we were ineligible for that. And then also yesterday I found out from the NEA that our grant was turned down, our proposal was turned down for that grant. So this really fills a gap this year for us. And this money definitely would be used towards those areas that I mentioned. And it would be very much appreciated if our request is granted this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the presenters? I don't see any at this point.
Okay.
Looks like quite a program. So, and
yes,
it's always, I've heard a lot of music at Mears Park, so that's it's great to hear that you're using that in other stages.
Yeah.
Any final comments, Vice Chair Hussein?
No, thank you, Chair and the committee members. This does have been a lower town. It happens my sister, a representative for Las Vegas District, and I'm honored to carry this bill, and I would like to looking forward for your support. Thank you.
Well, thank you for stepping up today, Vice Chair Hussein, and Miss. Thank you very much for telling us about the Twin Cities Jazz Festival. And people in action, hearing about all these festivals makes me want to get outside.
Yeah. Good morning, Chair, Honorable Committee members.
Good morning. I'll probably go. Everybody kind of grab a seat, and you can grab that one up here, too, if you want, and make yourself comfortable. That's. The little guys in the big chairs, too. Thank you. Vice Chair Hussein, go ahead and when you're ready and tell us what you're working on, sir.
I'm ready to rock and roll.
Vice Chair Hussein.
Chair Lilly and the committee members, I want to thank you all for listening for the last 30 minutes, and this will be the last one, I promise. And People's Action is our organization that works with youth, soccer and baseball and activities and cultural. And today, as you can see, we have Como baseball in through St. Paul. They challenge each other, and I would like to turn to my testifier.
Okay, go ahead, sir. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Daoud Mohammed. Good morning. I am the director and co-founder for People in Action, a youth-based, youth-oriented organization that supports young folks through the arts and sports. What I'm proposing today here is a what you call the Art in Motion Project. It's designed to enrich underserved communities through the youth sports programming that is interwoven with artistic and cultural heritage education. By integrating traditional Minnesota cultural activities, local history, and artistic expressions into our sports programs, we ensure that participants gain not only physical fitness, but also an appreciation and understanding of the arts and cultural heritage. Activities will include cultural dance and movement workshops incorporated into warm-ups and cool-downs, storytelling sessions that highlight Minnesota's history and cultural narratives led by local artists and historians, creation of murals and public art projects that celebrate both athletic achievements and Minnesota's cultural identity, involving both youth participants and local artists. With that, I would like to also welcome my colleague and one of our community partners, Michael Bradford, who is with the leadership at St. Paul Youth Como baseball team.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead and introduce yourself. And
hello, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michael Bradford. I am the treasurer of the Como Ball Youth Baseball and Softball Association. I am here with my son Oscar and his buddy Avery. They're excited to be part of the 8U League, as well as a couple of our players from the 15U League, Tommy and Marcel. And this little guy is late. I am also joined in support by our president, Corey Kling, and our chair of our programming committee, Dan Guion. So we are asking for support in providing low and no-cost youth sports to our community. With the funding, we can bring back baseball and softball to a once-thriving baseball community. This will also help create opportunities for a diverse and sometimes underserved populations in the city. With the closing of St. Paul Midway Baseball, a need arose to provide a quality baseball and softball program to the North End. The Como Ball Youth Baseball and Softball Association is dedicated to providing a comprehensive, inclusive, and enriching baseball and softball experience for youths aged 6 to 15, living in and around the Como neighborhood. Our mission is to foster a love for America's pastime, promoting physical, emotional, and social development through sport. We offer accessible, affordable, and high-quality baseball and softball programming, emphasizing skill development, teamwork, sportsmanship, and personal growth. Our organization serves the Como Park, North End, Frogtown, Midway Hamlin, and St. Anthony Park neighborhoods. So we offer the potential to reach around 18,000 kids aged 5 to 17 living in around those areas. 51% of our community members identify as BIPOC, and 51% of our community members identify as BIPOC, and 15% of our families are below the poverty level, which is why it is imperative that we offer low and no-cost options. We are happy to report that in our first year, we already have over 100 kids registered and have offered one scholarship, and we know we can do so much more. We have also created some strategic partnerships with Highland Ball, Parkway, and the Westside Boosters. So our goal is to offer affordable programming that creates positive experiences for our youth. We aspire to be an organization known for outstanding coaching, quality facilities, and a culture that prioritizes community and belonging. And I want to say on a personal note that baseball is so much more than just the game on the field. It's really the interactions, the conversations, and the moments we share with our friends and family before, during, and after. It is the chance for my boys to make new friends with kids they wouldn't be able to meet in any other way. And it's the chance for me to tell my sons about the time I stayed up after bedtime with my little brother to watch Kirby Puckett win the World Series with the Twins. Or it's a time, it's the opportunity to show him my Harmon Killebrew baseball card and tell him about the time that he hit a 522-foot home run. Or the fact that my wife went to school with Hall of Famer Joe Mauer. And maybe, just maybe, she'll introduce them if they're really good. They'll introduce them someday. So it's these opportunities and more that we're able to share our history and our traditions of baseball in our great state of Minnesota. So with that, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to talk today. We look forward to working with you to bring quality youth athletics to the communities in and around Como Park. And we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. So which one of you guys is going to be the future Hall of Famer? We have a strong legacy of St. Paul Hall of Famers, so. Or maybe both of you. So any final comments? Vice Chair Hussein, thank you for.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity for bringing those young kids and community forward. This is not only in my district, it happened to the city of St. Paul, and there's a lot of people that compete. There's a team in your district as well that's going to be part of this. We would love to have you the day that we are grand opening, which is going to be this summer. We would like to extend an invitation to all my colleagues and see how great those kids are going to be playing. And not only that, it's a time for us to invest baseball, because we do not give a lot of opportunity for our young. I've seen a soccer, I've seen a football, I've seen a basketball, but not enough for baseball. We would like to add it one day for Chair Chow for golf, so we can compete. And I want to thank you for listening to this, and please look forward for you to support this project.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hussein, and thank you, guests, for coming today. And it's nice to see all the kids, so thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Coach Corey, for putting this together for many years.
Paris, Representative Paris Vega. Welcome, Representative. It's a big St. Paul day, it seems.
I Mr. Chair, members of the committee, St. Paul versus everybody to make it great for our state.
Right.
But yes, I feel like it was more like the Hussein show today. So. Sorry.
Welcome. Please tell us what you're working on today.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of this wonderful committee, Representative Bettis Vega, representing St. Paul, as well as the city of West St. Paul, and I'm here to bring up HF 4669, which is a bill relating to arts and culture heritage, appropriating money to Neomuralismo de Mexico, which is a 501c3 Latino arts organization that really truly is leading when we talk about state arts initiatives representing all Latinos, not just in my cities, but throughout the state. Neomuralismo de Mexico has been able to contribute arts programming for not only children, but elders. And we look at the full spectrum of how arts engages communication, bridges diversity, and creates Minnesota as a leading state in arts. And with that, I want to talk about how this would be appropriating $250,000 to programming for the programs that you'll learn a little bit more from my testifier who's here today, the executive director, Aaron Johnson Ortiz, who can give you an overview of the great work that the organization is doing and what they are going to continue to offer to our state. Gracias.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Go ahead, please, and introduce yourself. And
buenos dias, good morning, Chair Lilly. Thank you, Representative Perez Vega, as well as members of the committee. My name is Aaron Johnson Ortiz. I also go by Aaron. I also have my colleague here, Juan Pascual Orozco III, who is an alebrije. Some of you might not know what an alebrije is. They're colorful creatures that we create with families and children, and we do these workshops all over the state. There's a handout there with some of the work that we do. I'm a very visual person. I'm a visual artist, so it's easier for me to show our work with images than with words. But just to summarize the work, some of the work that we're planning on doing over the next year, of course, we're working in Representative Perez Vega's district here in St. Paul, collaborating with the great Monica from Huesco, who will be presenting in a little bit, as well as with schools and other community organizations. We do workshops in Minneapolis as well, with White House, on Lake Street, et cetera. We have a partnership in Mankato for this summer and next summer planned with Latino children at the Minnesota State University in Mankato. In Austin, we have various public art projects. In Worthington, we have a summer camp that we're planning, and similar work in Red Wing and Duluth. So let me just go through some of the images, because again, this is where we shine. So this is an image from Worthington. Last year, we had about 400 participants who came and learned arts and crafts, Mexican focus and Latino focus arts and crafts. This is our giant alebrije puppets with master puppeteer Gustavo Boada, and we take these puppets all over the state. We've been, of course, to the Cinco de Mayo parade, the May Day parade, and this one specifically is in Northfield last year. Austin, Minnesota, this beautiful sun mural that was done by Flor Soto last year. This is only a small part of a very long mural. We inaugurated it last September. The mayor of Austin, Minnesota, called it the most beautiful mural he'd ever seen. He was blown away. Duluth, Minnesota, we had visiting artists from Chiapas, Mexico, indigenous Maya Tzotzil artist, Anton Vasquez, who did a residency in Red Wing in the Twin Cities in Duluth and other parts of the state. We also work with the Minnesota Immigrant Movement and with White House. These are some of our participants who participated in our Alebrijes workshops. We do traditional backstrap loom weaving. This is one of the most ancient art forms of the Americas. It's done by indigenous Maya women in particular. And this is Yemi Sumosa, who is a Guatemalan immigrant right here in Minnesota, who is a master weaver. Similarly, we have more work in Red Wing, Minnesota, more weavers, more paper arts. This one I'm going to stop for just for a second here. This is a project we did in 2022. It was a very impactful project. We did the first ever Day of the Dead out there at the Minnesota State Capitol. Governor Walz, Lieutenant Governor, and Attorney General came, and the governor issued a state proclamation acknowledging our work. and acknowledging Day of the Dead in Minnesota. We were shocked to find out that Minnesota became the first ever state in the country to officially recognize Day of the Dead, and we believe our work is paving the way for our community nationwide. Mural, a beautiful mural in Shoreview, in a Shoreview Library in Minnesota. So this is the kind of work we do. We are expanding our capacity this year and next, and we hope that the Legacy Committee will see our work, see our community, see our culture, and support us in this, in these endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the pictures and going through them. I mean, it is amazing. It seemed like I'd seen the one in Austin and somewhere along the way.
Yes, it was all over the news. Yes, thank
That's
you.
That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah.
It seemed like I had. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any member questions? Seeing none, Representative Paris Vega, go ahead, please, and tell us.
Thank you.
Final comments.
Yes, I'll give some final comments. I mean, the pictures are amazing. The work speaks for itself. I just want to thank the work and leadership that Mr. Aaron Johnson Ortiz has been doing for our great state. It's very impactful to be a Latina legislator and an artist to ensure that our communities see how we can bring balance, especially in post-pandemic, highlighting the efforts that our kids, all of our Minnesota kids, see when they see vibrance, color, culture, and murals that really bring a lot to the communities that may have not ever experienced such vibrancy, diversity, and color. So thank you, members of this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to my vice chair for giving us coffee because it was a long night yesterday. But as the artists say, the show must go on. Muchas gracias.
Right.
Mil gracias. Thank you.
Thank you for coming today and looking forward to seeing more of your pieces.
We're going to keep growing. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Yep. And you have another one?
Yes, I am going to bring the executive director down here of Wesco to join me. Right.
Just a second. So, thank you, Representative. And please go ahead and tell us what you're working on here. So.
Yes, well, this is a project through Wesco, Westside Community Organization, which is in my district of 65B on the Westside neighborhood that I am proud Westsider to be representing here at the state. And always, whenever you are a Westsider, you're always a Westsider. Let me give you information about Wesco, the Westside Community Organization. Organizes people of Westside to build collective power to advance justice and racial equity in the community for all people, with the vision of a just, united, self-reliant Westside where all people are connected, safe, healthy, and successful. Wesco is Westside proud. Wesco is Westside strong. Their work began as a movement of successful grassroots activism in the 70s on the west side toward off the placement of a metal shredder in the neighborhood along the Mississippi River's edge and to save the only public high school on the west side, Humboldt, from permanently closing its doors. Today, Wesco remains committed to its activist roots with community organizing and racial equity at the heart of their work. Wesco's work to increase the civic participation of residents by initiating organizing campaigns, providing leadership development opportunities for youth and adults, and by educating and building the power of residents, creating the neighborhood they would like to envision for future. Wesco organizes around the issues of racial, economic, social, and environmental justice and seeks to make lasting systemic changes that will improve the West Side for generations to come. Wesco also acts as a vehicle to inform and shape issues concerning land use and development through advocating for equitable development and participating in decisions about local land use, planning, and zoning. Wesco has multiple community input sessions where they measure the results of the project in qualitative and quantitative ways for their proposal that they bring here today for a four-way gateway entrance and community arts fest. Implementation of the site and partnering with the City of St. Paul regarding the community signage measures and allows event permits regarding sound, community arts, community concerts and performances from West Side and St. Paul artists, vendors, and a personal favorite community farmers garden market that takes place at these five garden sites in the West Side community of St. Paul. The project is in our West Side neighborhood, but it serves all Minnesotans traveling through the capital city as they will enter from Mendota, West St. Paul, the city of South St. Paul, the neighborhood of downtown St. Paul and the neighborhood of the West 7th community entering the Smith Avenue Bridge with plans to see and envision the arts of West Side signage and community celebrations at their gardens. Wesco serves the West Side Bluffs bordering the largest mouth of the Mississippi River. West Side neighborhood is the only St. Paul neighborhood that you must cross the river to enter, and I know a lot of my colleagues hear that from me all the time. This project leads and is committed to representing the town of the capital city that is often forgotten about. Even within our own city's legislative state proposals, they list the West Side not as the West Side, but the other neighborhood. This is a way for all Minnesotans to know the pride, the historic, monumental history that the West Side community has led as a community of all Minnesotans, for Minnesotans, West Side strong, West Side proud. And with that, I ask members to support the West Side Signage Community Garden celebrating the pride of the best side, West Side, and I'd like to turn over to my testimony here, the Executive Director of Wesco, Monica Bravo. Thank you.
Welcome, Ms. Bravo. Please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you. Good to be here. Good afternoon, everyone. Or still a little bit of morning, I guess.
Yeah.
My name is Monica Bravo, and I'm the executive director of the community organization. We also serve as the district planning council in St. Paul for this, in Ward 2 for District 3. And as part of that, one of our purviews is to look at the built environment, right? And so we are looking at a project that would permanently establish our neighborhood as a cultural destination. I want to say that while this work speaks to the West Side's diverse culture and heritage, it's also an opportunity to honor the broader history and stories of Minnesota as a state. The West Side has welcomed people from around the world, and historically, you know, we were once dubbed the Little Ellis Island of St. Paul. It was a very rich immigrant community when folks first came to Minnesota and came to St. Paul to settle, and they settled on the West Side with a settlement house there. So through our project, we want to preserve and in some ways reclaim the heritage there as a hub for newcomers to Minnesota. And part of this is about reminding people where we are as the only neighborhood sitting on the side of the river. We also want to make sure that the narrative that Wesco will work with culturally diverse artists to create cultural markers and artistic gateway signage that proudly announce and identify the West Side as a cultural destination. We believe that this also will serve as an economic driver for this area. And so I'll just skip to that. There are several primary access points to the West Side, as Maria mentioned. And with that, we hope to establish artistic gateway signage in each of the areas that enter into the West Side. And with that, we will also have cultural garden celebrations. We have 5 cultural gardens on the West Side at this time, and so we'll incorporate that into this artistic gateway marker and signage. I think that's about it. I don't have any photos to share with you. We have a lot of videos on our website. Love to answer any questions. We're very excited about this project. And if you have any questions, I'm here to answer.
So I have a quick question. Do you, at this time, are you receiving any humanities grants or, you know, through Legacy or like Arts Boards grants or?
We are not. This is my first go around here ever. And also we did just apply to the humanities and we're waiting to hear back.
Because there is quite a bit of money available, which will match up for
yes.
you perfectly in the future. So any member questions? I really want to thank you for coming. My father-in-law is a West Side Flats guy, an Irishman that lived with all the on the flats, and so I feel like I was an honorary West Sider because every day we heard about the floods or we heard about the poverty or we heard about it was amazing stories of the West Side's flats, the neighborhood house, and all the other great things of the West Side. You're very lucky to have a great West Metro West Sider there as a legislator. She's
yes.
a very strong voice. It's great to hear a strong voice in St. Paul, honestly, as a East Metro member. So thank you. Thank you for coming today. And any final comments, Representative Perez Vega?
I just want to say thank you for all the amazing work that the Westside Community Organization has been doing for 50 years, and the importance that they've always advocated for arts to be a part of each of their initiatives when it comes to community organizing. I was a little girl that remembers the first steps of what civic engagement was when it came to organizing and creating policy as a child with Westville's leadership, and it's just so beautiful that it always incorporated small art projects, and to see it now grow into an expanding of inviting community performances and concerts and a signage. I mean, if you come and drive to my community down Robert Street, which is a state highway, and you look at the Robert Street walking pedestrian bridge that connects you to from the Miguel Torres to the Girl Scouts of America offices, that was an art leadership project that was led by Wesco, and I look forward to the future art endeavors that they are creating for our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming, and thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Representative Erdahl. Oh. Okay. It's good that you brought the actual real Erdahl talent.
She's so kind, Mr. Chair.
So.
Thank
welcome,
you,
Representative Erdahl, former chair of this committee.
Thank you very much. Good to be here today.
Go
it
ahead
did,
and...
last night did end, didn't it? I mean, it's a continuation of...
It does feel a little fresh, the wounds. I already made of a comment about someone that had a marvelous voice and how nice that was.
So, well, good to be here today. We are here for the Litchfield Opera House, which... Well, we are grateful for the assistance given in the past. I want to assure you that this is my last request for help for the Opera House. Somebody else might in the future, but at least this is my last request. And actually, Mr. Chair, appreciate your visit at an event or two at the Opera House. And it's an important part of the Litchfield community, built in 1900. It's where I met Santa Claus for the first time, and it's an iconic structure that was once slated to be demolished and turned into a parking lot, and we've managed to rescue it and turn it into again an important part of the community. And so we're looking for $50,000 to help finish off some things we're doing, and my testifier over here we'll give you some more details.
Welcome, Mrs. Erdahl, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Karen Erdahl. And again, Mr. Chair, we thank you so much for your support. It has really been an integral part of getting this historic structure restored to its original mission of being a focal point of the community and far beyond, and enjoyed by all ages, and providing many different arts, cultural, and educational activities. And the place is really bustling now. So the lobby, the main floor, and the stage have been completed. And now it's time to focus on the balcony. And the legacy grant that we got last year for $100,000, we deeply appreciate. We ran into a glitch with SHPO and a change in personnel, and costs have gone up significantly since then. And so we're looking at about another $59,000 just to get it ready for to be in a place where we could put seating in. And the most expensive part, but really the most significant, both in terms of safety and in terms of enjoying events there, is the guardrails. Now, what we have now was added in 2012 for safety concerns. The former balcony railing was far below what code is. And so the temporary guardrails aren't consistent with the original historic 1900 structure. They really are clumsy as far as the sight lines on the stage. In fact, State Historic Society Director Kent Whitworth was in our area, and he asked to stop and see the Opera House. He hadn't been there for 5 years. And he was just amazed when he stepped in the front door and went through the main level, and he said nothing short of a total transformation. He was so happy to hear about the wide variety of use. Well, then I took him up into the balcony, and he said, I'm glad you brought me up here, because this is not a good this is not good for people experiencing events here. The railing is clumsy. That will be restyled and reconfigured so it is in line with code, but it also reflects the historic aspects of it. The basis of the design is the historic original design seen in photos, modified to meet the current code and safety requirements. Also, we have to put in guardrail and handrail balcony seating. We have to replace the millwork, and we have to repair the existing historic balcony seating flooring and steps per code requirements. So this is all groundwork that has to be done before we can put the seating in. And so we have been doing vigorous fundraising, and we really appreciate what, you know, what the legacy grants have done, what they have helped us to achieve. And they're an inspiration in fundraising. You know, we let people know we're not going to ask for grants unless we can show, demonstrate that you are willing to support it and that we have support from the community and the area surrounding it. And so, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. It's nice to see you again. And any questions for the team Erdahl? Representative Backer?
It's always nice to see the better half, Chair. Oh.
Well, I'm not the polished speaker, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Backer, thank you. Representative Backer. I'm not the polished speaker. I should have mentioned, too, that costs have gone up 20% since we got estimates last fall. And that's part of the reason for this increased need.
Thank you.
Or I guess the main part. Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
Thank you very much. Any closing comments, Representative Erdahl?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, to make clear, the money last year that was graciously appropriated from the Legacy Committee was to help finish off the balcony, and because of problems with SHPO and, you know, different complications and inflation, the cost has risen, and this is what's needed to finish it off. So appreciate what you've done in the past. Hopefully you'll help us again here, and you know, I invite people to come by. I'd give you a personal tour. We'd take you into the Lily Lobby that's right in the front, and then go around the back up the stairs to the Backer balcony and show you around the Opera House. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Team Erdahl. Very much appreciate your visiting today. Thank you very much. Representative Cha.
Dean's not going to grab a donut? Serious?
Yeah, you're going to.
We were a little surprised.
Dean Erdahl can grab two.
They were not open, though.
So welcome, Representative Cha, to your committee, and excited to see what you're working on here today. So,
yes, I'm always working on something, right? So yep. Thank you, Chair Lilly, for giving me the opportunity to present this.
Thank you very much.
Now, I'm here to present, this organization called SPNN, St. Paul Neighborhood Network here. you know, the St. Paul Neighborhood Network is about the program that I entered when I was affiliated with them was this program called DocU. It was a 15-week program to teach new filmmakers how to make documentaries, and so I participated in that program for 15 weeks. The genesis of my interest for being a documentary filmmaker was because many years ago I had met this black American golfer who was born in 1945, who didn't have access to golfing in the 60s, and so he decided to join the military for quite some time before he returned home. You know, in that time, he built a family and continued to play golf, but something happened when he became a senior, is that he actually qualified for three senior tour events on the PGA. And today, he is, I think, 79 years old, and he continues to teach kids in the Northern California region. And he was also the coach who coached Cameron Champ, who's on the PGA Tour. And so that was the genesis of my interest of making documentaries to highlight, you know, stories of Americans who have persevered and have, you know, have impact value for communities. Unfortunately, because he was in Northern California when I did this program, I could not make him the subject matter of my program, but he was the genesis of that thought. And so when I did my program, I decided to pick up subject matter, which was Representative Her. And Representative Her was my, she's smiling over there. And she was the subject matter for my documentary because I wanted to highlight her, you know, refugee American story. As you know, she is a refugee from Laos, and you know, she ended up in Wisconsin. And you know, one thing I learned about her, and I joke with her all the time, is that, you know, at the age of 16, her sister and her, one person had a IROC Z and the other one had a Firebird at 16. Wow. Right? Well, you know, that was quite the story, but you know, here she is, you know, with a master's degree, enlisting a doctoral program in a state legislator for the last, I think, three terms. And so, you know, that story was inspiring. And so, you know, that's the, you know, the at the heart of this program, it's about documentaries highlighting American stories to inspire. And so with that, Chair Lilly, I would hand it over to the testifier. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Yeah, go ahead, please introduce yourself. And I think we've got quite of a battle of mustaches here today.
Not only we share the love for SPNN, but also the mustache pride. So. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Xavier Vasquez, Executive Director of SPNN, a community media center serving underrepresented individuals, including low-income individuals, new Americans, BIPOC, LGBTQ+, and individuals with disabilities. Adults and youth explore their creativity and learn professional skills while learning photography, audio storytelling, and video in our documentary programs, Open Access Center, and youth programs. Our production team collaborates to produce content that reflects and benefits the local community. For decades, we have partnered with the League of Women Voters on candidate and issue forums, recorded local festivals and parades like Rondo Days and Cinco de Mayo, elevated artists, local agriculture, and worked with the schools to highlight concerts, sporting events, and graduations. Our community technology empowerment project stations 35 AmeriCorps members in nonprofits and libraries, teaching digital literacy skills to new Americans, low-income people, and other under-resourced communities. Investment from the Legacy Committee will allow us to continue our work and invest deeper in our community. We can increase the number of parades, community events, and productions we're able to do a year. We can invest in advanced video and audio storytelling resources for the community, providing high-end gear and more classes and advanced workshops. We can develop an apprenticeship program for youth and adults to learn the necessary skills to become a part of the film community in Minnesota. And we can invest in creating a robust program to support previously incarcerated individuals' job skills and connect them with wraparound support in our CTEP program. You can hear directly from the people we work with on the impact we have in the video we prepare for our testimonials. Please support SPNN efforts to continue and grow the impact we have on the Twin Cities community. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Now I'm going to play this video. Okay.
My name is Xavier Vasquez. I am the executive director at St. Paul Neighborhood Network. At SPNN, we believe in the power of media to shape our world. Since 1984, we've championed diverse voices, focusing on BIPOC and LGBTQ plus communities. Through media education, production, and our CTEP program, we empower individuals to share their stories, bridging the digital divide and promoting civic engagement.
I really think that the power of media is so important because I need media, I know, to be able to see myself, to be able to imagine and dream and to internalize something that's positive. So I really appreciate being able to have like SPN as a place where we can really cultivate that and create that space, because a lot of times people don't realize like media is a great, powerful tool for us to make these changes that we want to see, especially in a time like this.
Having folks that would always have my back if I need anything as far as advice and mentorship is so beyond what I expected.
SPNN is just like a great space to just be in, the energy, the vibes.
Everybody's so easy to work with. They're so professional. Not only, I mean, in studio is great, it's so fun, and I think people really enjoy coming into studio because it's exciting to see all those cameras and the lights and things like that. But when we do our candidate forums off-site, I feel like that's where SPNN really shines, because that's a lot of work. That's a lot of setup, a lot of variables that SPNN has to deal with, and they always make the end product look great. We're always so happy with the recordings, and we're proud to share them.
I think the most rewarding thing about being a CTEP member is the gratitude that I get, not only from the students and the community members that I work with. I have partnered with some of the English second language teachers here at Harmony ABE to bring digital literacy into their classrooms, and I enjoy working with these teachers, and that's an opportunity I never would have gotten if I hadn't signed up for this program.
Having this resource of the cameras and the lighting, there's a lot of folks out here that don't have those type of resources. So most importantly, what I love about St. Paul Neighborhood Network is the support team that you have. It feels like you're a part of a family of filmmakers, and you can't beat that. So that's why this place needs as many supports as it can get.
We need your support to continue offering these vital services, fostering a platform for authentic voices, and building a more inclusive narrative. Join us in making a difference in the Twin Cities and beyond. Por favor, únete a nosotros.
Thank you, great video. Any member questions? Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. Just a comment. I just wanted to say thank you, SPNN. I came to know SPNN, gosh, I think when you were still in the downtown St. Paul location a long time ago, when Mike Wassener was the head of that. And I was working with a small nonprofit where we were all volunteer-led, and we had learned about your program where we could come and use the equipment. And when you are a small organization that is lacking resources and everybody is just working really hard to do really good work, the ability to have access to equipment to tape and to make your own media and to also just like record events that happen within your own work, right, was really valuable to us. And then to be able to have the editing equipment to do that as well. And so I just wanted to say thank you for all that you do for community. I think that you are a gem that most people don't know about, and I hope that more people learn about it and understand the impact that it can have when you are under-resourced and under-funded. And so thank you so much, Anna, for what you do.
Thank you. Did your other guest just have a quick comment or something, or was there, is that for questions? Go ahead and introduce yourself, and then go ahead quick if you have something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Bonnie Schumacher. I'm the deputy director at SPNN. I was mainly here just to support if there were questions and things, but I've been around the organization for over 20 years. So when we were downtown and we were able to work with Representative Hurd, and I think that my big thing of being here is that working with all of the community that we get to help tell stories, get to uplift those voices, whether it's a nonprofit that's doing the work, whether it's a new American, whether it's a person with a disability who gets to tell their own story. the work that we do is really vital, I think, to being able to have us all get to better understand ourselves, each other, and our community. And I think that's one of the reasons why I continue to be at SPNN, and I've been here for so long. And I really appreciate all of your time today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Representative Cha, any final words that you'd like to share with us?
Most definitely. Thank you, Chair Lilly. Something to keep in mind, members of this committee, is that in the past, the SPN has been supplementally funded by the cable network. And because of the new technology of, you know, streaming Netflix and stuff like that, that people are no longer subscribing to cable, that impacts the funding for this organization. So that's why they're here asking for supplemental funding. Thank you, Chair Lilly, and the members of this committee. As you know, like Representative Hurst said, that access is important. You know, if you have never visited SPN, I urge that you visit them, because you will be surprised that you would have access to a full studio, just like, you know, in any production media with, you know, editing software. You know, I was very fortunate that in this program, we were able to have access to camera equipment, sound, lighting, and also in iMac editing software and, you know, hardware. And so these things are important when you come from, you know, a place where you lack resources. And even myself, somebody who's interested in filmmaking, I did not have those resources. So I'm very grateful for the program that I served 15 weeks with, and I'm really happy to represent this organization, and I hope you consider it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Cha, and thank you, guests. Thank you for coming, and we'll have to stop over for a tour. That sounds
great. Please do.
Representative Hur. Welcome, Chair Hur, and go ahead and tell us what you're working on. We have a handout, AC, with the.
You do. Thank you, Chair Lilly. And it's going to be me today, because the both Monkey Bear and the Asian American Center for Media and the Arts, they're small organizations and they hustle. So they're hustling right now and they can't be here today with us. But I just want to say, when that video was queued up, I was so worried that Representative Chow was going to show his interview with me. I was like losing it. That's why I was laughing. So thank God that wasn't what he was going to show. Because I do not interview well. But I do just want to thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about. First, I'm going to speak to Monkey Bear, and Monkey Bear is asking for $100,000. Monkey Bear is a small organization, small nonprofit. But you know what? It was really interesting to me that I never even really thought about who's represented in these stories. So the first puppet or marionette show that I went to, I brought my daughter, who's now 24, but she was, I think, 4 at the time. And we actually went to a puppet show, and it was Hansel and Gretel, but it was an opera. And I remembered how magical it was. And I remember just thinking, like, my child, who was, you know, 4 at the time, sat through an entire, like, it was a little opera presentation, but it was long enough that you would think a child couldn't sit through that. And it was so captivating. It was so magical. And I feel like every child should have the experience of, like, being able to see productions that way. And it wasn't until many, many years later when my girls were auditioning. They were, I always say I'm a closet artist, because in my culture there was no such thing as encouraging to do art. But as I watched my children start to audition for productions and for shows and for different things that they wanted to do, there was really nothing that really was telling stories of Asian Americans, which meant that they were never casted in roles because it was really difficult, right? And it wasn't until there were more productions being led by Asian Americans, being directed by Asian Americans, that my kids started performing, and they had the privilege of performing all over. You know, they performed at the Ordway, at the Bloomington Civic Theater, just in, like, these amazing venues throughout the Twin Cities. And I think about that, what was the gateway for them doing that? And it was literally this puppet show that really brought us into the beauty of performing arts, right? And so I'm really supportive of Monkey Bear, because they are an organization that is tiny but small, but they're mighty. And they have been training and working with artists with free workshops. They provide free workshops and mentorships so that people can tell their stories through puppetry work as well. And so I really hope that the committee does consider this. I just wanted to share a couple of really small pieces of data regarding Monkey Bear, and that is that the demographics of the participants, 35% Asians, 33% Black, 13% multiracial, 8% 8% Latinx, 8% Native, and then 3% SWANA, which is really interchangeable with really stands for the Middle Eastern, North African, and South Asian communities. But I think that what's really interesting to me is that like, there's such a diversity in, like, when they look at the genders and the performances that they represent. 61% female, 14% male. Non-binary is 25%, and trans is 3%. And I think that those are really important data points for us to remember whose stories are being told, right, and who is being developed and telling these stories. And one quote from a participant in one of the workshops says, "I love Monkey Bear because they do real work to getting more BIPOC people into puppetry. They provided me with training, mentorship, and a community. Without this, I would never have been able to complete a puppet show." And I know that I think in our minds we have an idea what a puppet show is, but I would just encourage all of us to experience one of these shows and a story from another community, because it really is transformative. And so I really appreciate this community, this committee's support and considering this. That's it for me for that one.
Thank you, Chair Hurt. Any questions in regards to Monkey Bear? Okay. Go ahead, Chair Hurt.
Sure, and I just wanted to maybe say in closing that I, you know, even with yes. being under-sourced and under and you know, underfunded, they've been able to serve over 100 artists, and that 40 of those artists created puppet theater pieces, moving, and they continued this work on. And so the fact that we continue to build artists and we continue to have them move on to do other things, I think is really important. And because Minnesota has such a strong arts community, that's why we are such a wonderful state. And so I'd love to see that continue. All right. Should I go on to the next one?
Yes, and thank you for those final comments on the Monkey Bear. And I hope to see one. So, Chair Hurt, go ahead.
Sure. And the next organization that I'm up here to talk about is the Asian American Center for Media and the Arts. And this is a really fantastic organization. So this this arts organization is actually really a collaboration of a number of unincorporated arts groups. And I think that it's probably one of the first, especially in the AAPI community, that I think of, I've seen. And what is special about this group is that they bring together a number of different types of arts, whether it's visual arts or performing arts, that they actually host and nurture artists from all avenues of art. And so they provide space for the ability to create, but they host workshops, they create and produce art, they stage film and screen works and works in progress, and they just really nurture the AAPI community in the way that best suits them in telling their stories. With this, they're asking for $150,000, and that would pay for rental space rental and costs, as well as arts performing to engage Minnesotans in celebrating and education around the Asian American experience. I'll just name a couple of, I think that this is such a fantastic organization because they are so decorated, the people who are part of this are so decorated in the arts community, and yet we know so little about them. And I think that it is, we should really lift up their work. The awards include like 2 Arts Achievement Awards from the Metropolitan Regional Arts Council. We have 3 Sally Awards from the Ordway Center for Performing Arts for Arts Access, 3 Bush Leadership Fellows, and 3 McKnight Fellows. I mean, they are just fantastic artists, but artists who like know how to run things. And I will just say that one of the organizations that is a part of this is the Lazy Hmong Woman Production. And I remembered the first time there was a production. It was in the, of course, it was called the Lazy Hmong Woman. And I remember thinking, like, they're telling all of our dirty secrets to people. But it was hilarious because it really talked about the parts of us that are sometimes we want to hide or sometimes we think are shameful. But it's just who we are, and it allows us to accept the fact that, like, we are not all perfect. And even within our own communities, we have diverse stories to be told. And I remember just thinking how spectacular that was to be able to telling this this shameful thing in a very funny way for us to all feel like we can be accepted, even within our own communities. And, you know, and I will just say that, my own children have benefited so much from the arts community. The arts community raised my kids, and they provided opportunities for them that they otherwise would have never. I think I'll just share a really quick story about why this is so important is that so my younger daughter, who's 20 now, I don't know if you all remember the movie Pete the Magic Dragon. I think that was what it's called. It was a green dragon. And my daughter went in for the audition. She was still young at the time. And then after all the kids auditioned, they called me in and they said, "Can we talk to you afterwards?" And I was like, "Oh my God, what did my kid do in this audition? Like, is she in trouble?" And they said to me, your daughter is so talented. And this director said, I have been doing this for 25 years, and I can count on one hand how many times I pulled a parent aside and told them that their child is really talented and they have a future in this. And she said to me, if your daughter doesn't get casted, I want you to know it's not because she wasn't talented. And of course, you know, the show, the movie was, you know, about a white family. And so they had her audition because she was so talented, and they said she was fantastic. But she was never going to get casted in that. And so then one of the, you know, like in this particular group, this this Asian American Center for Media and the Arts, they have artists in that that have been producing wonderful pieces. And Naomi Koh, who is one of the members of this group, she had a pilot that she put together called Nice, and I think at one point it was with Warner Brothers. And and my daughter auditioned for that, and she was in that pilot. And I think, like, it took an Asian American woman to tell an Asian American story in order to cast an Asian American actor. And I think that that is so important when we think about who is being represented. And I think for us to remember that art isn't just art and telling stories. Art is economics. And that when we support the arts, we support people going out to dinner before they go to shows. We support local businesses. We support the fact that, you know, people go out for drinks after they have the show, or they, you know, purchase goods because of their seeing a show or a part of that show. And so for us to always remember that a healthy arts community means a healthy economic community as well. So I would love the support of this organization and for the small asks as well. That's it.
Thank you, Chair Hurt. Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, and Representative Hurt for bringing this forward. You know, being a refugee, you know, coming from, you know, war-torn countries, at times we're thinking about survival. We're not thinking about art and leisure. And so we're just trying to survive. We're just trying to make sure that, you know, we preserve our culture. And, you know, arts in this form is our the way to preserve our history and to kind of record our oral history. And so I really appreciate programs like this because it gives us the opportunity to reflect on the journey we've been on and where we're going and to preserve that oral history in arts. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Chuck. Any additional questions? Seeing none, any closing comments?
No, Chair just Hurt. Support these great organizations, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to bring them in front of the committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Representative Murphy, I saw him a second ago. Did he go out the back door? Or?
He just walked out the side.
No, here, I can go to him. I think he went out to talk to the person.
Representative Backer, maybe... I can go. Why don't you just go ahead?
I would. I have no problem. I think he probably walked back there if you want to go get him.
He's not going to listen to this one anyway.
Oh.
We have food, too. Look at this. She brought us donuts and health.
Now everybody's here.
Now everybody's here. Or you want to...
Whatever you want to do.
Why don't we hear, because he traveled. We'll hear him first, okay? Because I have
thank
to
you
be...
for your accommodation, yeah, Representative
you
Becker.
Guys are up there. Okay, good. Let the B team go.
I think, Mr. Representative Murphy, can you just wait a second? I'm sorry, because I think Representative Yeager is another committee. And I just want to try to, she can only have like a few seconds.
Okay, we're good. Oh, sure. Done.
What, you're done?
Help is done. We're
oh, okay, a lot of changes. Representative Murphy, thank you.
Well, today is my first hearing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
And so I was encouraged to bring some treats.
Wow.
For the first hearing. So a little bit about my background. I grew up on a dairy farm, and I spent 25 years in the dairy supply business, so I'm very fond of ice cream. And so I brought some ice cream bars I want to pass out to the members.
Wow.
They must think we're not very sweet here. I don't know.
That's, you want to show which district you grew up in, Representative Murphy?
Yeah, I grew up in Scott County, really close to the Lesueur County line. So,
so Brian Morello.
Oh, you should get a box.
Wow, look at that.
Sure, we'll get a box.
What do you have, a box for each person?
Yeah, pretty much.
You better give the chair your boxes.
Please pass around, Sherry, yeah.
I don't think I need a pass. I think I need the whole thing by myself.
Anyway, here's some napkins.
I will. And then I'm going to eat. Thank you.
Well, that's very kind, Representative Murphy. I think we're... The sad thing is we're worried about a melting, so we might have to.
Yeah.
We'll only give you 3 minutes then.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Well, thank you.
Welcome to the Legacy Committee, and tell us what you're working on, sir.
Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a memorial park. It's in Ottertail County. It's just south of Battle Lake, Minnesota. It's the oldest township in our county. And this memorial, Veterans Memorial Park, represents 135 members of that township that served in the military and our veterans. And so what we want to do is there's been a lot of participation already in putting together this Veterans Memorial Park. And they just want some help to beautify it. It's right off of State Highway 10. It's got a great location. And so we want to try to highlight some of the work that they've already done to make sure that we honor our veterans. And I have a testifier here today. This is Clinton Bankston, and Clinton is the historian of the township, and he also works as the Veterans Memorial Administrator. And so I want Clinton to say a few words about the memorial.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and welcome, sir. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
And my name is Clinton Bankston. I'm from Battle Lake.
Thank you. And go ahead.
Minnesota.
Go ahead when you're ready, sir.
As Tom mentioned, we live in Ottertail County, and I live in Clissville Township, which is the oldest township in our county. We have 62 townships. I grew up on a farm which is located about 2 miles from the Veterans Park, which, by the way, is in the center of our township. Exactly in the center of our township, we have this Veterans Park. I grew up on a farm, and I also had a teaching degree, and I taught. My first year of teaching was in Goodridge, Minnesota, if you all know where that might be, up by Thief River Falls. But I wanted to continue farming. I could not get farming out of my blood. So opened up in Henning, Minnesota, and I taught there for 33 years. And I also farmed at the same time. In 2000, about 25 years ago, our township bought this piece of property for a town hall, but it never got built. Weeds grew up, it wasn't maintained. So in 2019, I went to the annual meeting of our township, Clissville Township, and I made a motion. I said, we got to do something with this. And nobody wanted to build a town hall, so I said, let's put up a park honoring our veterans in our township. And that's how it got started. Everybody at the annual meeting thought it was a tremendous idea. We had about 40 people there. It passed unanimously. So we started doing it. And when I proposed this, I said, we will not take any taxpayer money. We are going to fund this by donations. And we have done a pretty good job, but we want to try to make it a little bit nicer. Last Memorial Day, we had a so-called dedication, and we had flyers like this posted all over the place, and we had about 200 people there, and we served lunch and so on. So that's how our veteran, it's not a memorial because we still have a lot of people in our township that are living. There are veterans. They are still living there. Right now we have 2 people in our township that served in the Civil War. Our township was founded in 1865. 2 people in our township served in the Civil War. 14 World War I vets. 30 World War II vets, of which 3 were my uncles. One served in North Africa, Sicily, and Italy. One served in the South Pacific, in the Philippines, New Guinea, and he got 2 Bronze Stars. Another uncle served in the Battle of the Bulge, which he received a Purple Heart. So I have a pretty good history about our military. We have about 35 people that served in Vietnam. Two are still living in our township, and both of them have Purple Hearts. Believe it or not, I have not found one that has been killed in action, which is pretty good. We have six that received Purple Hearts, but nobody has been killed in action. So that's, we're here to try to get some, believe it or not, every chance I get, I try to watch what's going on in our state capitol. I watch Channel 19. And about 2 years ago, I heard about this legacy fund. So I thought, well, let's see if we can get some money to help this Veterans Park. I proposed it last year, didn't get any place, so but here I am today. We left this morning at 5:30.
Wow.
So that's what we have. As a sidelight, I'm asking for around $15,000 if we could, if you have any money left over after today. But as a sidelight, as Tom mentioned, I'm the township historian. I'm sure some of you know that this year, June 6th, is the 80th anniversary of D-Day, 80 years ago. Well, it just so happens I'm 80 years old, and I'm going to be there. We're leaving on June 4th. I don't know if you know it, but there are 242 people from Minnesota that are buried in Normandy Beach. 242. Six were killed. 27 were killed on D-Day. I have where their graves are, and I'm going to do my darndest to find them. So if you have any extra money to sponsor me, I'd love it, but... Mainly, I would like to help you help me in the Veterans Park.
Thank you very much, sir. It's really great to hear the history and all the legacy of service to our nation and all that. So, thank you, Representative Chop. Member questions.
No question, just some comment. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Congrats on your first presentation.
Thank you.
And thanks for the ice cream. Thanks for commenting on the written statement here in regards to the veterans that are in your district. I think it is important to remember those that gave and served this country, you know. And I just want to thank you for continuing their legacy and fighting to recognize those that gave so much to this country. So thank you very much for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Chaw. Thank you, sir. Any other comments? Any closing comments, Representative Murphy? Again, thank you for the treats. It's fun to see them out in the crowd as well. And if anybody wants some more, there might be a few left here before they melt. So.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Chaw, for those comments. I just like to say it's so nice to be able to honor people as committed as Clinton and what he represents. I think just in closing, I just say that this is a good investment for Minnesota. It's an honor for our veterans. It's good to educate our youth. It's good to share our history. And spouses and families have sacrificed. And so the freedom isn't free. And so, I just want to thank you for hearing our bill.
Go ahead, sir. One final.
Thank you. Just one more comment. I have my granddaughter up here, and her, and two of my great grandkids that went along with me today. They want to see what's happening in our state capitol. By the way, there's some people that ask me why I'm doing this. I should have served in Vietnam. That's my age. But I was married and had a kid, so the Army didn't want me. This is my way of serving. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Murphy. And
thank you.
And welcome, kids, to your capital. Representative Hemingston Yeager. Wowza. Paul's a welcome.
How does my district, is it a sweet place to live?
Sweet. So you're saying our places are sour. Okay.
Dang. I mean, you said it.
I know. It's representing Lily. He's a chair.
Wow. We're... Now, who sent out this memo? Because I don't think it was me. There must have been some staff that was encouraging treats here or something.
The minority took this. We'll take the responsibility.
But it's very kind. Well. So welcome Hemingson, Representative Hemingson Yeager to the Legacy Committee, and please tell us what you're working on today.
Thank you, and thank you very much for this opportunity. When I think about kind of the criteria and what this committee looks at for funding, I really think that Art from the Inside really does just that. It provides art education and art access to people who have no access to anything outside of their prisons. This allows them to use art in a way that is therapeutic, which also results in better safety for our prison guards, fewer discipline incidents, and helps with better emotional regulation. I don't want to spend too much time introducing it because my testifier, Antonio, does a fantastic job, so I would like to hand over my time to him.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome to the Legacy Committee. Please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Lily and Committee. My name is Antonio Espinoza, and I am here to represent House File Number 3756. I am the founder of Art from the Inside. It's a 501c3 nonprofit that I created in 21. I'm also a retired senior correctional officer at Stillwater Prison. Served there for 19 and a half years. And right now my position is the passion that I have in trying to work with the incarcerated folks in that system to try to find healing and transformation through the powers of the arts. In 2018, my friend and coworker of 16 years was murdered by the hands of an incarcerated person there. The first murder that happened in our state, Joseph Gom was his name. And what I'm doing is to honor my friend's death, to rebirth something good and new out of his death, and trying to bring a new look on the way how we, the system, works with our incarcerated folks in our system. We need to try to use art as a tool, to use it as a person-centered approach to help these folks try to find healing and transformation. I wrote a bunch of stuff here, but I'm not good at reading it out loud. You know, I kind of have it in my head, but it's like...
Yeah, go ahead, speak from the heart.
It's you know, it's so important that we, you know, us out here in the world invest in people who need the help. And by helping these folks, you're helping the system, and you're helping our incarcerated folks, you're helping our guards, you're helping everyone try to find healing and transformation, not only the people who are incarcerated need healing, but our communities need healing. The families of both sides of the spectrum needs healing. We all need healing, and art has been that platform that I've been using to try to bring it out into the world and amplify it to folks. And this is where I've come to speak with you today to have a bipartisan agreement and say yes to this bill. I think this bill is going to benefit everyone, not only the incarcerated, but everyone in our state. And some of the things that we could, the appropriations to this bill will be helping in hiring wellness facilitators and teaching artists. It will be helping creating a curriculum for the classroom sessions. It will be helping creating murals in the facility. Art supplies and materials are needed for this project or program. Paying for exhibit spaces and community spaces. Creating logbooks and for each artist who who creates artwork. You know, we normally create a booklet so that everyone could see all the work that they've created. And we need money for general liability insurance and policy for the people who are coming into the going into the facilities to do this work, just to make sure that everyone's safe and covered. All this is an expense that we could use, and it's a helpful thing for us. And lastly, you know, I'm inviting everyone in this room to go across the street to the Capitol. There's an exhibit, ongoing exhibit right now at the Attorney General's office with 60 pieces of artwork that I've been able to appropriate and get from these folks and put it in our state capitol so that, you know, you guys have a moment to pass by and go to Keith Ellison's office and see the artwork there and listen to their words and see the work that's being done. The theme for the exhibit is called Justice Reform. And it's a powerful exhibit. So I want to thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. This means a lot to me because if my friend wasn't murdered, I don't think that I would be here doing this work. And I think it has value. I think that we need to invest in our community and to see the better part of people. Thank you. And I approve this message. I've always wanted to say that, and I approve this message.
We're getting close to the campaign season, so that's a little disclaimer. So, yeah. Thank you very much. Nice job. Any member questions? Representative Cha.
Thank you, Representative Hammerson Yeager, for bringing the treats. You know, Woodbury is kind of sweet, isn't it? But no, to a test fire, you know, thank you for your service. You're 17 years and
19 and a half.
19 and a half. Wow. So thank you for your service, and thank you for continue the journey of remembering your friend and your coworker, and it's great that you're continuing his legacy, and we appreciate you being here. So, thank you,
Rip. Any other additional member questions? I don't see any at this point. I just have a quick question. Have you applied for Arts Board grants or any humanities grants or anything along those?
Yes, sir. We have numerous times applied for grants, but they're just one-timers. This would be an opportunity for it to be a consistent funding where, you know, we don't have to worry about where the money's coming from and just do the work.
Okay. So, thank you. Any closing comments? Representative, again, thank you for the treats. Very kind. You didn't have to, but it's very nice. Any final comments? Thank you.
Yeah, just a couple. So I think Antonio's story is just spectacular. And, you know, I'm very honored that I get to carry this bill for him. He is one of my constituents, so the ability to kind of get to know him and form a relationship has been really transformational for me, too. This is a guy who took a horrible, horrific tragedy, and instead of being angry and vengeful, he has taken it and transformed it into something that can bring healing to the people inside, but then it also brings beauty onto the outside. So he brought kind of one of the pieces of art that people have created, and, you know, the ability for someone to kind of have the chance to work through their emotions, work through what, you know, has happened to them, and then express it in a way that is something like this and not violent, I think is just, again, it just speaks to the transformational properties of this program. And I think when you go up across the street to the Attorney General's office and really think about, like, who created these pieces of art, it really humanizes our incarcerated folks. And again, you get to experience that healing along with them. And again, I just think this is such a profound program that intersects so many priorities with public safety, with the arts, and is just a really, really unique opportunity for funding. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. And thank you, Representative. And again, thank you for the treats, but great proposal. And plan to get over there and take a look at the art.
Yeah, please do.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Backer, thank you for your earlier accommodation. And
Chair, is it safe to say, save the best for the last? Oh. Would that be a good thing to say, or would that not be the right appropriate to say, Chair?
Well, Lead Backer, you're welcome to think that.
Okay. No.
The best for last.
I guess Representative Murphy may disagree with that, so we'll just leave that alone. So my testifier had a hiccup, could not make it down here. So what I want to, first of all, have people look at in the packet is the two pictures. This is in Pelican Rapids, which is another project in Otter Tail County. It is on the A side, 9A, which is a district I represent. The challenge is before I got there or started to serve Otter Tail County, Minnesota Transportation decided to put roundabouts. Now, they're starting the roundabouts this year. It'll take this summer. And I had the opportunity about 3 weeks ago, I think it was exactly today, maybe it was 4 weeks, to stand at that corner. And if we look at this corner here, when that roundabout is finished, this VFW Memorial, which is this right here, the wall, which has a lot of history, like we heard from the earlier testifier, Clinton, different history, because these are all from that side of the district. The challenge is, and they have some issues already, you can see some brick. Cars have decided to pay a visit to some of this. That means they ran into the wall. So they're really quite concerned. And, of course, as we know, these individuals are the ones that allow us to do our work here today. Anybody who have fought for our country allows us to visit in this, to serve in this setting. That's one of the reasons I serve as a state rep. I was not able to serve in the military and as an EMT because I feel that's important. So what this $30,000 would do is would move this memorial wall to a park that they have in the community of Pelican Rapids. Because on the conservative estimate, which is there, it's 60 semis that come through this intersection a day. And if anybody, probably no one in, and I could be wrong, very few people probably have had the opportunity to drive a full semi through a roundabout. The end of the trailer does not always want to follow as close as the tractor does. So that's 21,900 semis on the average that will go through this intersection. And, of course, the veterans are greatly concerned that the wall will get damaged and disrespect their fellow citizens. So that's what the $30,000 does. And also north of town, they do have a turkey factory. That's another reason why they have so many trucks that go through that intersection. So the money would relocate this wall and the flags and so forth. And that's what it does. And there is, 3 weeks ago, I heard the tremendous amount of history behind this wall and the passion and so forth.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Any questions? Representative Scraba, you had a question?
As a veteran that I served, when I hear comments, you know, those that serve combat, you know, deserve, they're the number of us 11 Bravos, combat people that shoot bullets for a living are this big compared to the rear that supports us. Without those people, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have it. So I whenever we talk about this, I prefer the word served. Everyone that served, period. You know, okay. You don't have to just be a combat vet. It's all good, but your folks, we have them everywhere in the state, and I think it's well worth getting these things moved so it's safe. I'm privileged to go to Jackson Hole, Wyoming every year skiing, and they put a roundabout on the way to the airport. And they had these beautiful columns to determine the corners of the roundabout. And I can't remember if it was the third or fourth time the semis rode them over that they decided maybe we shouldn't put them back up. So they will go down. It's yep. not a matter of if, it's when. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that is.
Move it, and then you're a lot safer. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Representative Farr.
Representative Scraba, you have a combat vet sitting next to you. I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any closing comments, Lead Becker?
Well, thank you, members. Even though I did not bring any sweets, I guess I'm sweet enough. Well, I guess, I don't know. My other two prior ones, maybe not. No, I'm just kidding. But this is really serious. We put this money aside, and a lot of people visited. And it's very important for our children and grandchildren to understand the sacrifice here, not just with my project, but, of course, in Representative Murphy's district too. So would ask your strong consideration to fund these projects. Not a lot of money, but still is very important for the tradition of our country. Thank you.
Thank you, Lead Becker. And so I thank you all members, and we've made it through quite a few presentations. We have a hard task ahead of us, so with some amazing presentations. So it's going to be some tough decisions. So appreciate everybody's time today. We meet next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So our normal meeting going back to Wednesday. Thank you for your accommodation. We lost Wednesday, so picking up today, and have safe travels back to your homes. And again, thank you for the great presentations today. With that, we are adjourned.